Welcome to another episode of the Untangling Web3 podcast. So, X2Earned apps are flipping the script on how we engage with technology, rewarding users for real-world actions like moving, focusing, and even eating. It's one of the most exciting frontiers in Web3, but building it right takes more than just slapping tokens on habits. It requires smart design, rock-solid infrastructure, and a deep understanding of incentives. Enter today's guest, Pierre Obasa. He's a senior software engineer at VeChain and the founder of Mugshot, with a deep focus on building decentralized systems that actually work at scale. If it's on-chain and action-driven, Pierre is probably building it or has strong opinions about how it should be built. Today, we'll be diving into the tech, the challenges, and the future of X2Earn dApps. Pierre, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Alec. As always, I really enjoy being part of your podcast. First time you invited me in your amazing live event in London, and I can't wait for the next bigger and even greater event. That was very cool.
Thanks, man. That's why we got you on. We obviously had our first live event in London, and you were a speaker, and there was lots of positive feedback. Everyone basically loved you and the project, and we were like, well, we've got to get him on the show now to do a real deep dive and go what you're doing at Mugshot, because really the growth is incredible. But before we get there, let's talk about, let's lay the foundation to people. Yeah. Let's start with the basics. What is a dApp, a decentralized app? How does it differ from a regular app that most people kind of interact with on a day-to-day?
Absolutely. No, that's a great question, because at the end of the day, a dApp at its core, it's an application, sure. But instead of, relying on some kind of backend that lives on AWS or Google Cloud, a dApp fundamentally differentiates from regular applications because it talks directly to a so-called blockchain. Okay. D stands for decentralized, but the blockchain part means that all the core logic of your application actually resides on chain, and often even the data too. But the cool part of this is that it's not just, the typical, blockchain, crypto, it's a scam, meme coins. No, it's actually the control is in the hands of the users rather than a centralized party where just like that, one day my data can be removed or even worse, just stolen or what actually is happening day to day, lended out, being sold for third parties to then spam you with advertisements. And we all know the usual run book of Web2 applications are. Yeah, so this is a summary, of dApps.
I get you. So like when we're talking about what's a big app that everyone knows, something like Facebook, I'm interacting with it as a user, how the data is actually exchanged, what's being stored on me, all the kind of, the algorithm that's controlling my newsfeed, how I'm messaging people, that kind of stuff, is kind of black boxed in a way. And that's run by Facebook on their servers. And I, as a user, don't really have access to that necessarily. So I don't really know what's being done. But you're telling me that dApps, that kind of black box is kind of open sourced in a way, held across a distributed ledger, and that's how it's run. That's what you're kind of saying, right?
Yes, and I like to do this comparison, to make people understand exactly what a dApp is compared to a regular application. Let's say your regular app is like your bank, okay? Mm-hmm. You use an app, it's slick, it's like modern bank applications are very user-friendly, yes, but it's still a bank. Like you have no idea what's happening behind the scenes. They can freeze your account at any time. You can lose your data. It can, go through maintenance. It can get shut down at any moment. Your money is kind of not your money. Whilst a dApp can be seen as a vending machine. Mm-hmm. Well, just to picture this, a vending machine, you walk up, you see the rules of the vending machine. You insert like a token, you get your snack, mm-hmm. and this entire end-to-end process has happened without a manager, without having to identify, log in yourself. You are not waiting for any approval. And it's all autonomous logic where the user interacts directly with the end product. and does not have to, you know, go through any third-party intermediaries. So this is kind of the comparison that I like to do.
I like that. That makes sense. I think like the thing with, I would say with this one is that everyone's always like, okay, you know, blockchain technology, it's readable. Everyone understands it. That kind of stuff is open. And like, yeah, the vending machine is a great analogy. I think another one that people tend to compare it to is, you know, Web 2 is like a highway. You have lanes and you have rough rules, but you have no real kind of guarantee that cars are going to stay in those lanes. Whereas like Web 3 is more like trains where you can see the rails and you can roughly kind of work out that those trains are going to stay on those rails and the rule set are the rails. But again, I would kind of counter that sometimes and say most people don't understand blockchain, right? They don't understand code. Yeah. It's not readable to 99% of the public. I think AI is maybe helping a little bit with that, maybe kind of breaking down some of like the, you know, the on-chain basically scripting language and making it more human readable. But I like what you're saying, that it's auditable to people that understand it. It's transparent to people that understand it.
Yes.
And that kind of creates a degree of trust or trustlessness that's required.
Yes, and we've had such great advancements in recent years with Web3 and decentralized applications, because we need to imagine, and we'll be also talking about mugshot later on, but we need to imagine that blockchain is here with Bitcoin, okay, since 2009, but actual programmability on chain, we're talking, okay, Ethereum is 2016, 2017, but the actual apps that have had a bit of traction, it's even less than 5 years. And the progress we've had from those initial applications where it was so complex to understand to even, you know, what is a wallet? How do I connect my wallet? Oh, I need this extension. My computer is not compatible, not even alone a phone. Like in the early days, interacting with dApps through a phone was something you couldn't even imagine. But nowadays, all of this has been abstracted, well, at least most of it. So the experience is tending to be as Web2 as possible, but keeping the benefits of decentralization, which we can even go to soon.
Okay. Like, let's go into it, man. Many of these. Like, this is one of the things that I've seen, like developers were talking about 5-6 years ago. You really hit the nail on the head there, where it's like they were thinking 5-6 years ago with Ethereum that it was enough that their entire value proposition of apps was this trustlessness, that things were, you know, you could prove ownership and all this authenticity and all that kind of stuff that blockchain provided. But really what most users cared about for 99% of applications was the user experience. Like that was it, right? Exactly. And they didn't have that user experience because you're competing against the giants of Facebook, you know, Instagram, whatever you want to say, WhatsApp, that had like so much money being pumped into it, so much incentive, so much kind of value prop and experience. And now you're saying that we're kind of getting to the stage where the UX is roughly the same, but you still have that underpinning value prop of openness, transparency, ownership. So there is now an additional kind of value add.
Yes, exactly. And to your point, unfortunately, the Web2 environments, the regular application environments, do not offer a real solution towards the fact that they're usually single points of failure. They rely on these centralized services that are monopolies nowadays. We have the AWSs, the Googles, that if for whatever reason decide to censor you or even have, you know, blackouts or maintenance issues, your entire product can shut down. And you have also the very important fact that your users don't have ownership towards their part in the application. So these are key reasons to why decentralized apps were initially thought of. And then they evolved also to be very beneficiary for creators and like a community building. Just to like mention a few, like for creators, let's imagine that I'm someone that wants to sell directly to my community. With decentralized applications, you can do something like NFT drops without third-party platforms, without them taking like a cut. We know Apple takes 30% for anything. I say hi, and they want my 30%. you have like subscription models, like with token gating. You can have even royalties. Like, remember 2021 when we had the NFT boom and so many artists were getting onboarded in Web3? It's exactly because Web3 facilitated royalties that traditional systems do not allow. Every single resale revenue was directly triggering a cut, a small royalty fee directly to the owner without having to go through frivolous contracts or third-party middleman that usually take the majority of it and nothing ends to the actual creator, designer, owner of the product.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And like for communities also, with VeChain, I'm a software engineer of VeChain. We recently built the VBetter DAO, which has exploded even beyond our imagination in terms of user growth. And this has been possible thanks to a decentralized application. The governance itself is a decentralized application.
Yeah.
And it has allowed for our communities to not only vote and be part of what features get built, but they can also participate in how funds are allocated, how funds are distributed, how the future changes of the entire ecosystem happen. So it's full community control. Whilst a traditional Web2 application, maybe only in the case of like stock-based companies, you can be a stakeholder, but nothing comparable to this kind of community involvement, which is very unique to dApps.
So that's the thing. When you talk about, say, like the censorship resistance and the royalties and all that kind of stuff, and say, you know, traditional kind of Web2 style companies taking too large a cut and taking too much in the middle from creators to the buyers and all this kind of stuff, all of that could be possible in a Web2 model. But the point is they don't do it because there's no real incentive. It's really hard to get competition because they've monopolized the system. And they could do it, but they don't. And one of the things that we kind of get from this Web3 model, based on what you were saying earlier on, is this idea of the kind of the logic being hard-coded, public, open, so that you kind of know the rules that you're buying into. And when I create, say, a form of art, I know that when someone resales that art, there's something that's hard-coded into that, and everyone can get on board with that, see the logic based on that NFT to give me a small royalty. So is that the kind of one of the main selling points that you're talking about, is trust in a software or trust in the code that can then be used in an open public world?
Absolutely. It's the decentralization factor of all of this. And it ties directly to a concept known as composability. In fact, I believe that the composability part of decentralized networks that then create decentralized applications is the fact that you're not living in like a silo. It's not a closed, embedded ecosystem. It's actually a product that can be built and then composed between other decentralized applications. Just to put it into simple terms, for example, a DeFi protocol can plug into a lending protocol and offer combined yields. An NFT game can use another project's assets and together offer, you know, combined solutions that, for instance, you know, the Steam market is having all their assets embedded and isolated to their own framework, and it's not possible in any way to, you know, expand outside of that ecosystem.
Okay, and, I like that.
Yeah, and in our case with the VBetter DAO, for example, the DAO incentivizes people to participate and choose the future of an ecosystem that is promoting sustainable and better actions for what? For saving the planet at the end of the day. And this has been thanks to the fact that we're talking about a global permissionless box, that if tomorrow it decides to, you know, AWS decides to stop, Google decides to, you know, cut us out because we're doing too good for the planet, they can't.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, that's a champagne problem, right? If you're going too popular and making too much impact and they cut you out, that's a good problem to have. I think that one of the things that when we talk about, say, the idea of ownership and decentralization and permissionless, it kind of doesn't mean much to, say, 99.9% of users out there. But one of the things that you touched on, and I think which is kind of like the real kind of take home from a lot of these dApps, is the community participation. The idea of, say, On the one hand, it's like the token rewards. So being able to get involved in a community through, you know, tokens and know that your token can accrue value and you're rewarded and then you can use those tokens to vote. I think that is a really powerful value add that you see almost every single DApp really jumping onto and building on. And the other angle is the community, kind of the community DAO aspect stuff, using those tokens, using your value in the network to then control the stake of the network and vote on future features. How important do you think those two factors are for DApps?
I think they are actually very important in terms of the fact that you are allowing your users to have a direct involvement in the entire process. This is one of the fundamental differences with the regular apps. Whilst with regular apps, you know, you don't really own anything. I mentioned, you know, the games, you know, your Fortnite skin, your Instagram following, it all lives in somewhere that if one day they decide it's not yours anymore, it can be deleted, locked, pulled off, whatever. But in the case of these decentralized systems, what happens is because you have true digital ownerships, your assets actually lie in your wallet that you only have access to, unless, of course, you write your private key in your notes or something and your girlfriend has access. I don't know. That's, you know, stuff that people do, unfortunately. And your identity isn't, you know, just tied to an email, or it can be, we so call it pseudonymous. So if someone decides to not even want to share his identity, he can and still participate at the same degree and same level to someone that wants to share his identity. Like it's not identity dependent.
I get what you mean.
Exactly. And back to your point regarding tokens. Tokens, unfortunately, in recent times have got a bad connotation due to bad market decisions from bad actors. Mm-hmm. But tokens in decentralized applications, in my opinion, are there for real work inside the ecosystem. They should lie as utility rather than speculation. For instance, in the VBetter DAO, the better token is the reward token for doing positive actions. So each better token is backed by a real world action. And recently, the cycle has been closed that with that better token, you can now pay to use the rewards and incentives you've received for doing better in the real world again. And for example, with Mugshot, we'll be talking about later, you can then buy, for example, another sustainability coffee.
Okay, so we're starting to jump onto the X to Earn stuff. I think that before we get onto that stuff, because we haven't really explained that topic in the podcast so far, I think that you are right. Like the idea of, I think most people think of, say, how crypto relates to dApps as kind of like loyalty points. And I can kind of see that analogy there. It's like a Web3 version of loyalty points. But it's so much more than that. Like it gets a bad rep a lot of the time in crypto, but the kind of the way, the use case that you're talking about there, I think it just represents stake in a network. If you're someone that has a lot of these crypto assets, either be it an NFT that represents your kind of your membership or what you've done in the community or whatever, or it be the tokens of that project, that is your stake in the network. That is part of your identity in a lot of ways. And I think more and more we're starting to see identity not be this ephemeral thing where it's like, you know, only these big institutions can define who you are as a person. They have to do due diligence in KYC that no normal human understands whatsoever. But it becomes more and more about on-chain data. How many transactions have you had? Okay, how much Ethereum do you have in this network? How much VET do you have in this network? That is also part of your identity. And it's far more provable, far more open, far more transparent. And I think that is, it's so much more than just meme coin BS speculations points. It's actually like, how invested are you in this network? How big a part of this community are you willing to be? How much stake do you have?
No, I completely agree. And we're even starting to have a shift in the, let's say, enterprise point of view. They're not looking anymore at, you know, the fake numbers and fake data. They're actually looking at, are people interested in this? Are people actually using this? Or is it just, you know, randomly created numbers to just seek for the next investment or seek for the next value. Because unfortunately, the blockchain ecosystem has had so much value extracting rather than people injecting, you know, positive value. So we're having this shift, in my opinion, towards useful applications. And finally, decentralized applications are starting to become, at least with what we are working with, starting to become what they were originally, you know, thought for.
Yeah, utility over speculation. Okay, so on that point, that's a nice inroad into the next bit. We've talked a little bit about X2Earn. We've definitely mentioned like that topic. Can you explain, you know, what is the X2Earn model? Why is it so powerful? And why is the technology of cryptocurrency and blockchain so essential to enable that model? It's a big question.
Yeah, yes. So X2Earn, it's like first time you hear X2Earn, like what is this acronym X2Earn? Even if you read it, I've never seen something like that. But it's very, very simple. It's actions becomes currency, just to put it into simple terms.
Okay.
In traditional systems, you have your actions have value, but not, let's say, you in particular. Say you hit like 10,000 steps, you get like a congratulations. But in reality, the fitness app is selling your data. You recycle religiously, but then you do some research and you see that the system is burying all the trash in landfills. You write reviews, you know, refer friends, you drive electric. But yeah, you're not actually, let's say, rewarded for going outside of your comfort zone for doing better. So the X2Earn model is a initiative behind the V Better DAO, and it consists of rewarding users that perform an X action. And that action can be anything. That action can anything. Be...
I assume it has to be positive stuff, right? Probably not bad things like steal to earn or something like this.
Okay, steal to earn, I'm struggling to find the sustainable aspect to it, but yeah. For example, cleaning, you know, the street or stealing the trash from the street back in the bag. Eh? You see, that's a probable way.
There's a nice one. There's an angle there. There's always an angle.
Yes, exactly. So that's the X2Earn model. And it's a model that we've seen be able to work in a seamless way through crypto, through blockchain. Because with crypto, like smart contracts that are behind the scenes, don't just record that you did something, they're able to react immediately, automatically. In fact, they're trigger-based, and they're able to do it at scale at a global level. Whilst if you had a centralized solution, you would have to think of the global scalability, you would have to think of reducing the latency, you would have to think of how do I actually remunerate, how do I actually compensate in a financially legal manner, whilst in a decentralized blockchain-based token model, it's you bike to work, for example, this triggers a smart contract call, it transfers the reward to the user, and the user celebrates and buys his next coffee.
Okay.
Something like that.
Exactly. Okay, I get you. So the main thing is that it's you. So an angle here is why is it important? Why do you need crypto? I guess the one angle is because it's the native currency of smart contracts. And like you said, smart contracts are pairing this stuff there, providing like this global, instant, programmable, permissionless payment layer, all the buzzwords in one. And they do it transparently. And again, I think that's quite important is that when you're buying into these systems, you know how it's going to work and you know how you're going to be rewarded so you can trust in the system and trust in the future of the system, I guess, as well, quite importantly.
Yeah, the trust exactly is another fundamental point because you need to also trust that when you do real actions, you're having to also share a lot of data. So you need to also trust the fact that in a decentralized environment, you usually have to deal with open source code. Otherwise, how do you trust it? And that's usually the case of decentralized applications. So users are more incentivized to trust the system because it's all transparent for them to look, or maybe hire someone to review the code. And they know that their data is not being shared or sold or being, you know, publicly shared for anyone to read or, you know, capture.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions like recycling at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at vbetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show. I guess one of the things that you were talking about earlier when you're saying, okay, we understand that, you know, right now we're not being rewarded, and you were talking about saying traditional, a really good example that I quite like is the idea of giving reviews. I think it's really important to give reviews. Businesses that run off it, so much commerce is based on the review system.
Yeah.
And there are so many problems with the reviews, like fake reviews, you know, reviews with bad incentives where it's not like linked to an actual purchase. And I think that blockchain generally, blockchain technology and cryptocurrency can add so much value to the review system. Like one, I could talk about this all day. I think me and Jack did, where it's like one is linking a review to a real world payment. Again, that real world payment would have to be linked into crypto, which is quite powerful. But knowing that a review is authenticated and then linking it to the actual proof of purchase to do that, and then rewarding the user with a micro incentive. I think there's a massive angle for that. But another one that kind of relates to a Web2 model that most people don't think about is the attention economy. Like, you know, Twitter, X, Facebook, all these social media apps. That's like a $10 to $30 trillion economy that is purely based on advertising. And they are monetizing and absolutely getting, extracting value parasitically from your attention and making so much money from it. And people don't really realize that. They kind of just get hooked on these systems and they don't realize that attention is being monetized from them, and, you know, they're being sold away basically. And I love that kind of dApps are maybe trying to undermine this system. It's hard to know if they're always, you know, they're not always for the good of humanity, right? Sometimes they are just doing it in a different way to also monetize attention, also get you into the app. But it's quite powerful that there are, say, alternatives being offered where at least the person knows what the parameters are, how things are being monetized, and the kind of the game that they're playing when they jump into a dApp.
Yes, yes. And I met the fellow guys at Lens Protocol. I know they're trying to build this decentralized social graph. But yeah, for them, the key issue, let's say, is not really building a decentralized social network, but it's the sheer monopoly these big social networks have. So in case, as you said, of the attention economies, an invitation to, you know, upcoming dApp builders would be, we really need to find a way to disrupt. If we want to change what's already in place, it needs to be disruptive. But the fundamental thing is the user experience. Like for the end user, it needs to be the same or even better. But
yeah,
we need to find the incentive for them to actually switch, because unfortunately, people don't really care anymore about their privacy. It's something like, you even notice it in everyday new policies, terms and conditions. They don't even hide it anymore. It's like, these are our new conditions. Do you accept? And everyone doesn't even look. It's, yes, that's it. So if we don't act fast, in general, as you know, an ecosystem, it will be all ever so worse in terms of, you know, privacy being shared willingly at the end of the day, or maybe not willingly, but people just surrender.
It's a powerful message, and I agree with you. Most people don't care. I think a really good, especially when it comes to social media, I think social media really does showcase the worst of humanity, and it's like the worst of humanity that's kind of addictive on attention. And I don't want to go too too much into that because I've done a whole episode on this stuff. But there are kind of alternatives coming out, like Blue Sky, which was made by Jack Dorsey, which is kind of this Web3 alternative to social media, which has an incredible user experience and is like much more open, transparent. Like their entire algorithm is kind of open source. You can see exactly what the metrics are and define it. So it's not addictive. But again, there's no idea what the business model is there. They haven't thought about the business model because they don't want to monetize attention and advertising. It's really unclear what the business model is there. So I don't know how successful that app's going to be in the long term. But we're talking quite generally about X2Earn apps. You've obviously built an X2Earn app, Mugshot. You know, you've launched Mugshot. It seems to be doing incredibly well. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is, what inspired the idea, and what's the problem you're trying to solve with it?
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that quick intro to Mugshot. And let's make the audience guess, Mugshot is a dApp. Yeah, so Mugshot is a, let's say, out of the ordinary dApp. It's not the usual, I joined this dApp, I use some tokens, get a yield, I swap some tokens. No. It's an application that is so-called caffeine-fueled. It's basically a rebellion against the disposable culture.
Okay.
Let's imagine this, just to simplify. You walk into your favorite coffee shop. You choose a reusable mug.
Yeah.
You snap a pic of that reusable mug. And just like that, you get rewarded because you chose reusable. You didn't choose disposable. And you deserve a small cashback for your coffee. That's literally the core concept behind Mugshot.
It sounds simple. Yeah, exactly. It sounds really simple.
Exactly. So we decided to flip the script. We decided instead of thinking of, you know, copying what other ecosystems are doing and just bringing them to VeChain, which is kind of what's happening, what I've seen happening with most decentralized applications. We have this killer app that's created maybe on, let's say, a Ethereum called a so-called Uniswap. And then on a so-called Binance, they call it a pancake swap. And boom, just like that, a revolutionary app is on another blockchain. In this case, we wanted to solve a different idea, a different problem, sorry. Basically, the problem is that every single year, 250 billion disposable cups are trashed. That's just to put into perspective, if you are able to stack these cups one on top of each other, every 2 days, you're able to cover the distance from the Earth to the Moon.
Wow, damn, that's crazy. I did not expect that. That's ridiculous.
Exactly. And Alec, could you guess like what percentage of these cups are actually recycled?
Of those to the moon and back every 2 days, I'm going to say 20%.
Unfortunately, it's less than 1%.
Oh, shit.
Yes, because these cups, you know, to conserve the temperature, they have these plastic linings inside. They're kind of compostable material, so they're not obviously that easily recycled. And, you know, I was recently in Seattle, the coffee capital of the U.S. And to my, unfortunate sight, I saw that every 9 out of 10 customers that were taking coffee away to go were with disposable cups.
Okay.
Which is inconvenient because it's a huge problem, but talking to people, the main reason, obviously, is for them convenience. They just want to take their coffee, go to work, throw it in a trash, and that's it. They don't want to think of a solution.
Okay.
So with Mugshot, we said, let's first try and test out if giving a reward, a cashback for their coffee, this could be a sufficient incentive to start pushing people to choose reusable rather than disposable. And I'm happy to say that after less than a year, we've been on the VeChain mainnet since July 2024. In less than a year, Mugshot has reached almost 1 million users, right now 230,000 addresses. And yeah, exactly.
That is crazy numbers. Like, especially like for Web3, that is ridiculous numbers. Even for like Web2, that would be huge numbers. Damn, that is incredible.
Exactly, exactly. And it's actually mind-blowing for me too. Like, I did not expect this. It was a simple trial. Since day one for Mugshot, it was a simple button. You click the button, you took a shot of your mug, and through AI analysis and other services validation that we perform, it verified if the mug was reusable, if the content inside was coffee, and just like that, you got a cashback because you chose sustainable.
It sounds so much more simple than most decentralized DeFi protocols with crazy yield stuff and like too much staking, and it's, yeah, very unclear. I love this kind of three-step model. Take a picture, get rewarded. Well, two-step maybe even. Like, well, go on the app probably is the step one. So what's been the kind of the reaction from users? Obviously, a million users is crazy. What's been the kind of, I guess you've got like a big community now. What's been their kind of reaction to the solution so far?
They have always enjoyed the fact that it's very simple. In fact, even in Twitter spaces and X spaces, you hear that people are introducing their family members and the first app they talk about is Mugshot because, well, who doesn't drink coffee?
Yeah.
Tea drinkers. But tea drinkers now can use Mugshot too. So everyone can use Mugshot now.
We've got a big British audience there, so you've pleased a lot of people by saying that tea's allowed as well.
Yes. So the core concept, very simple to understand. But on top of that, we built the experience to be very easy to resonate with the application itself. It's not like the usual app that's very professional looking in terms of this corporate kind of vibe, but it's you as a user that is interacting with Muggy, who's the mascot of the app, and you're keeping Muggy happy because you're drinking your coffee or your tea with reusable mugs. In fact, every time you take a shot of your reusable mug, you see Muggy that's walking, and if the checks pass, Muggy starts dancing and says and celebrates with you that you're saving trees.
Nice. I was going to ask you how much gamification is in this model, and it seems like you are pushing the gamification angle as well. I'm glad that you kind of brought up corporations there as well. Like, I can understand why the reaction to retail users, right? They're doing this action that's positive, and it's obviously tackling a huge, huge problem sustainability-wise that we're currently experiencing. I drink a lot of coffee. I can imagine, extrapolate that across the 8 billion people around the world. That's a huge problem if even like a percentage of that is being littered. But what's the reaction been from institutions? Like, that's kind of my, I always think business, like is someone going to pay for this? So if I am, a big coffee producer and I am contributing to this massive problem, potentially facing, fines and lawsuits and all this kind of stuff, and you offer a solution like that, is that a conversation that's been had yet with the big, say, coffee manufacturers or coffee shops and stuff?
So if one day a big coffee shop or coffee chain would be interested into Mugshot, we believe that first we need to demonstrate what actual added value we can bring to them. So at first glance, you could say, oh, we're bringing users. But I'm kind of thinking differently for them. I'm thinking, why don't we build the next step for Mugshot, which is actually offering a service for these reusable programs, coffee shops, restaurants, bars, where we're able to tackle the incentive layer for them. We're able to tackle the tracking of the reusability that's happening in their locations, in their coffee shops, in their restaurants, in order for them to access what their sustainability metrics are, what their foot traffic is. But on top of this, we do all the loyalty program for them. So, for example, every 5 times I return to a sustainability coffee shop that's part of Mugshot, I am entitled to, let's say, a free coffee. Okay. Or every 15 times I come, I'm entitled to like a free breakfast. And all of this tracked by Mugshot as a service, so that it's abstracted behind the scenes, and these realities can keep their branding their trust because maybe users trust their branding and Mugshot stays behind the scenes. This is something we're thinking of right now, and I can't spoil too much, but some pilots are starting that we're testing out, and hopefully it's something that they'll be interested into, which is kind of, let's say, an idea of both sides. So let's see how it goes.
Yeah, because that's my thing. I know you don't want to, like, my immediate reaction would be, okay, you've got a million users. Any brand in the world would be keen on a million users. But it's exciting that you're kind of thinking of it in a different way. And even if you are, say, packaging this service and giving it to them, say, underneath the scenes or whatever, the fact that you have a million users really highlights that there's a real strong value prop and you're having retention, you're having people come into you. So even if you white label it or whatever, however you want to describe it, and offer it to them as a service, it obviously works because people are using it right now. And I imagine the reaction is going to be incredibly powerful.
Yes, it's sincerely more than I would have ever thought in such a short time. But it just demonstrates that if you keep things simple, the incentive is right, and you make the experience, you know, fun, people will start sharing the word to their friends, onboarding family members, even without a referral program. We tested out a referral program just for a couple of weeks, a lot of months ago, and it did help with some user growth. But we're talking, we had, 1,000 weekly active users, and then that went to like 3,000. It's nothing, you know, huge. But the key thing that allowed for the user growth is exactly that simplicity, the fact that the experience is enjoyable. And me, as you know, as a person, I kind of build a habit into doing Mugshot. It's kind of like a habit action rather than, I'm doing it just because of the money.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think that's one of the most powerful things, is that people respond to small nudges. If you're trying to completely redefine how someone lives their life, you got to pay a lot of money. If you're just nudging someone a tiny bit to do a little thing, then it doesn't cost as much. The impact, you know, if you do that to the exponential, is far greater than if you're paying $1,000 per day to make someone run a marathon or something like this. That's why I quite like this simplicity, small thing, but small things every day to a million users is crazy big. So if you can't talk about the partnerships too much, and how this is potentially being deployed in brands and stuff. And I really like that you're saying simplicity is key. I completely agree, especially with like weird new X2Earn dApps that people aren't, you know, familiar with necessarily. I think it's very important to be simple, a few steps. But what we see with a lot of dApps is, and a lot of, say, you know, apps generally, is they have a really neat value prop. And then as time goes on, they add loads of features and they become increasingly complex. And then over the course of years, it's no longer clear what the value prop is anymore, because they try to go to so many different angles. Can you tell us a little bit about, say, the future roadmap, what you're planning with Mugshot, if you're planning additional features, additional angles, and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I love iterating always. So we started from single button photo reward. Then we evolved to adding the map. So in the map, you can find your nearby coffee shops, go to a coffee shop and get even a greater incentive, because we know the greatest contributors to the problem are the coffee shops, the restaurants, the bars, not because, you know, they're bad people, but they have a lot more volume than you at home just taking your coffee in a disposable cup. And then from there, we evolved into actually tracking and showing the user what his impact is, rather than just giving him a reward. Like me as a user, what have I saved from from polluting? What have I saved regarding the planet's health in a fun way? Like, how many toilet sheet papers have I saved using Mugshot? You know, these kind of fun vibes. But in terms of the core product for Mugshot will always be choose reusable, and you deserve something. You deserve a reward because you've chosen reusable. And to do so, it will always have to be as simple as possible for the user. And what we want to do is also leverage the fact that governments are starting to push towards reusability too. And who better to do that than Mugshot, that has the proven user base has proven the concept that you need to incentivize users for this. It doesn't have to be a huge incentive, but you know, make the experience fun, make them also be able to brag about it. And you'll see that once people enjoy it, they will also start creating content for you, start promoting it for you. In fact, we've noticed people planning their like cafe trips to maximize their rewards. They've been sharing like their mugshots on socials, kind of like a flexing status. Look, I've done my mugshot. Look how cool my mug is. Show me yours.
And I like that.
Yeah. So how the roadmap looks is improving this process of keeping the people enjoying taking their mugshots, sharing it to their friends, participating even in competitions to who is able to save the most. And at the same time, in parallel, building solutions for businesses that want to be sustainable, that want to prove their sustainability metrics, that want to increase their foot traffic of eco-conscious users, but also convert non-eco-conscious users to eco-conscious users, to green users. So these are the two aspects.
I'm glad you said that, Piero. I was worried that you were going to like, I'm glad that your message seems to be keep it simple, concentrate on the value prop, and just get it out there as much as possible in as many use cases, as many brands, and as business as possible. Because so much of the time, most people that we speak to will say, you know, we have this value prop, it was successful, and now we're going to do an AI agent that does cross-chain, DeFi protocol, plugged in with identity, ZK, quantum, and you're like, just calm down. You've got a really good value prop here. Just get it out there to the masses. And I'm glad that you're keeping it simple and just really dialing in on the gamification and, you know, I guess the community stuff as well. So we have a lot of, you know, developers, builders that follow the podcast. What would be your advice to someone who is interested in building a dApp from, you know, your experience in actually building a successful dApp?
Yes. So the most important thing is not how perfect your product is, but I might sound like a broken disc, but it's the reality. It's just how easy is it to use and understand. So if you're able to think of something that's easy to understand, first of all, and then make it easy to use, then it's all about going as fast as possible live and seeing what the reaction is, seeing how your user base, how your users interact with your app, what the feedback is. And then from there, you can start iterating, improving maybe the user interface, the experience, making it seamless, giving some you know, fun vibes to it. But the core concept is, again, all about simplicity. And another very, so that's at a high level. On a low level, technical level, it's finding the right stack that allows you, again, to be as fast as possible in terms of time to market. And based on my experience, I'm probably biased, the right stack in decentralized applications is behind the scenes, you have the VeChain blockchain, which allows fee delegation even a lot before than the so-called account abstraction that has happened in recent years. You have very fast block time confirmations. You have very low gas fees. Now, these may be very technical terms, but a upcoming dApp builder will understand. And then on the front end, I would go for frameworks that are with very large builders and communities like React, TypeScript, and just make it as accessible as possible too. And by accessible, I mean, it doesn't have to be multi-language or multi-readable worldwide. In fact, Mugshot has 180 countries, but it's only in English. And this just demonstrates the fact that you don't need to read anything to understand how to use it.
So, that's nice. I like that.
It's combination.
That's a good closing message, Piero, man. I really appreciate it. I think there's a quote that kind of sticks with me from that, which is like, perfection is the enemy of progress. And it's just get something out fast. It's never going to be perfect and you're going to improve over time. And Mr. Beast on YouTube also adheres to that. He's like, just keep iterating and try and learn something every week and improve a little bit every week. That's a really powerful message.
The worst feeling you can have is you have this amazing idea. You're convinced no one else has it. You take 6 months to build it, 2 months to test, and then you're live after almost a year. And maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks before you're going live, you have this guy that just released, caught your entire user base with a very ugly looking app. And then you're coming later as someone that probably copied him. And then you're just fighting an uphill battle whilst you could have released a very simple product, test out the idea, see if it works. If it doesn't, completely change, iterate. So yeah, that's my advice.
Nice. That's good advice. Fail fast, push it out there and learn from it.
Yes.
Because perfection is the enemy of progress. And that's something we've adhered to on the podcast. Well, we've come to the end of our episode, Piero. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show after doing the event. I'm so glad we got you on here. I feel like I've learned a lot. And yeah, everyone who's listening, go check out Mugshot. You can also follow Piero Bassa on LinkedIn and X. And yeah, thank you for listening wherever you may be. And join us next time to untangle a little more of Web3. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.